Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Borderless Podcast. Today, I have on the program Ty Crandall, and he is an internationally known speaker, author, and pod show host, and business credit expert. He has over 16 years of financial experience and is recognized as an authority in business credit building, business credit scoring, and business credit repair. Ty is the author of two popular books on credit named Perfect Credit and Business Credit Decoded. He is often interviewed on radio shows and news shows, TV programs, magazines, including Entrepreneur and Inc. And he currently serves as the CEO at Credit Suite, where he has helped create and grow one of the biggest and most credible business coaching operations in the United States. So first off, I want to welcome Ty. Thanks for coming on the show.
James, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So obviously we talk about entrepreneurship, we talk about having your own business. This is a big part of it is where do you get your funding? You know, unless you're already wealthy or you have money coming from somewhere, if you're starting a business, you're going to need to get funding. And I ran across his YouTube channel here, which is just called Credit Suite. And I would recommend, you know, people go to this Credit Suite on YouTube. And it's just tons and tons of information that you give away for free there. And you really are an expert at all the ins and outs of building business credit specifically. So I guess first we can talk about, the basics. What is business credit?
Well, when we talk about business credit, you know, Entrepreneur Magazine, I think, reports that like 90% of business owners don't know anything about it. So I think it's a great question, a good place to start. Ultimately, business credit's very similar to what consumer credit is, but it's credit for a business instead of credit for an individual. So you're obviously familiar, your listeners are familiar with consumer credit, whether in the United States or any other country, right? There's credit reporting agencies that gather your personal history of credit cards and auto loans and mortgages, and they compile it on reports and give you scores. And the quality of that consumer credit determines what kind of financing you can get. Can you get a home loan? Can you get a car loan? Can you get a credit card? What rates and terms will you pay? Well, business credit's exactly the same thing for a business. So just like individuals here, you know, for example, in the United States have credit linked to their social security number, and it's a different number based on what country you're in. And when it comes to business credit, in the United States, businesses have an EIN number. It's called something different in other countries like Canada and Australia. But again, there's an identifying number for the business. And what business credit fundamentally is building credit profile and score for that number, for that actual EIN number. Mm-hmm. So for example, in the United States, you know, you have an EIN number for the business, you're building your credit profile and score for that EIN number, and that credit profile and score is used to you do much of what you're used to in the consumer world. You're getting credit cards for the business. You can use it to qualify for mortgages for the business. You can get auto vehicle financing in the business name. So it allows you to get credit in the business name without attaching a personal guarantee. You're not personally liable for that debt without it being reported on your personal credit report, without even needing to use your personal credit report to get approved for the credit. It's basically just credit for your business EIN that's not linked to your social that could be used for the business to basically fund itself.
Right. Now, when I've run this by people that, you know, a lot of them are in real estate. I know a lot of people that are in real estate. That's kind of a lot of my background. And when I talk about investing in real estate with business credit, a lot of them don't know about that. And what you just said, you know, I've said that to people, and they, even when they are, you know, investors, you know, successful investors, but they've done it all through their own name. And that sounds like that it can't be that easy. And you talk about getting some credit on an EIN without a personal credit check. How can they go about doing that?
Well, first of all, and I kind of relate it this way. If you really think about the work that you put into building your consumer credit profile and score, I don't think anybody would call it easy, right? I mean, mm-hmm. All the credit card applications you filled out, the mortgages you filled out, the car loan applications you filled out, the documentation you supplied to get all that stuff, you know, it's something that grows with you as you grow as an individual. And that's the same thing with your business. As your business grows, your credit profile and score grows with you. But again, if we look at the fundamentals of consumer credit, business credit's basically started the same way, right? You can't go into a bank and get a loan, get a mortgage, get a car loan, get a high limit credit card when you have no consumer credit. You had to start at the bottom. In the consumer world, the bottom was secured credit cards, right? Or very small limit credit cards, $100, $200. In the business world, we start building credit with what's called vendor accounts. So vendors are credit issuers like Uline or Quill. These companies will do a couple of unique things. They'll give you business credit even when you have none. So even if you have nothing on your business credit report now, they will still issue you credit, and they will then report the credit to the reporting agencies. So those two things are completely unique. They'll give you credit when you have none. They report it to the business credit reporting agency. So the key in building business credit is to get accounts with these vendors, pay the bills, then those report to the business credit reporting agencies. Then when those accounts show up in your credit report, they show up as what we in the financial services arena called trade lines. When trade lines populate on a credit report, you then have a credit profile, and then you have a credit score, and the credit score reflects how you've paid those bills. So really the key to building business credit is through tiers, starting at the bottom, these vendors, getting about five of those accounts, getting them reported on your business credit reports, hopefully and preferably paying those accounts on time or early. That's what gets you good scores. Once those accounts report, you have trade lines. That gives you a profile. The paying payments as agreed gives you a good score. And that profile and score is then used to move through additional tiers of credit, helping you get more and more and more credit as you grow. Again, like I said, James, very fundamentally the same as consumer credit, right? When you started with secure credit cards, then you got higher limit credit cards, then you got revolving, then you could get car loans, then you could get mortgages. Business credit's very similar progression. You just start with vendor credit versus secure credit cards.
Okay, yeah. And I think there are a lot of people that, you know, they might be hesitant, you know, to be taking on this. Well, I don't want to get credit cards. I don't want to start doing all this. But, it sounds to me, I mean, it's something that if you have an EIN, if you have a corporation set up, you really should start to try to build some credit, right away as soon as possible, because it's something that takes time, right?
Well, sure. Absolutely. And, look, I have friends that are solopreneurs. They're lifetime. They have lifestyle businesses, and what I mean by that is they make the money they want to make to have the lifestyle they want to have. They don't need business credit. They don't need loans. They have no intention of really growing the business. But then there's another larger percentage of the population that this is what we do, right? We are here to create a business to help to serve. The more people we can help and serve, the better. So the business grows. And any business that grows needs access to capital. All the statistics out there show that the businesses fail because they can't access the capital.
Right.
Then the problem is what are they doing now? Well, 75% of business owners are getting money from family and friends, and an even larger percentage are using their consumer credit to fund the business. So the problem with all these things is that most people are not starting and growing business with no money. They're wiping out their personal savings. They're using their personal credit cards. They're getting money from people around them. And what happens in those scenarios is that, as you probably already know, and I know, it's well more expensive than you ever think it's going to be, right? Like you think you're going to start a business for $5,000, and then it ends up being 20. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see people use. They bury themselves in consumer credit card debt. They tank their consumer credit scores because they're like, hey, man, I'm going to get this business off the ground. I got $25,000 of credit cards. I'm just going to put five of it on there. Well, then all of a sudden, your credit cards are maxed out because it wasn't five, it was 20. That's where things get to be problematic. And so, like you said, it takes time to build credit. So you want to start it right from the beginning, because if you're going to grow a successful business, you're going to need capital. And it's better to have revolving credit because you could use it, pay it down, and then reuse it and only pay interest on what you're actually using. So it makes sense to start building that credit profile and score early. You get the credit you need to fund the business. And it also helps you then become more fundable and get better loans, better terms on loans as you continue to grow the business. So just all the way around makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also I would think that it's just a good idea to have that as a fallback, instead of just having cash sitting there that, you're saving in case, something happens, to have some credit and at the best terms that you can get it in case something happens, you always have that line of credit there.
Well, and that's what makes sense, right? Yeah. I mean, we have a $100,000 credit line, for example, that we don't use a lot, but, sometimes it kind of justifies it for us. So, for example, we just bought a URL for $12,500, right? That's the most expensive URL I ever bought. We'll make our money off of what we're going to do. Now, it's not that we don't have the money to pay for that. We do, but it makes me feel better if I can pay the money with a little bit of interest back over the course of 6 months. I just feel better about the purchase, right? Mm-hmm. So You know, I can. Our credit line has an interest rate of less than 5%. We use business credit to be able to get it, and so now, you know, I can make purchases that I may typically would not have made that move the business further ahead because I have access to capital to be able to do so. Now, in other circumstances, it's just the absolute saving grace. A marketing campaign doesn't work out. Business plummets 1 month and no explanation of why. Your air conditioning unit goes out. A core employee leaves the company. There's a million of these scenarios where all of a sudden you need money, and that's when having access to revolving credit and credit lines saves your business. Mm-hmm. You know, earlier you used real estate as an example. Well, you know, why not use a Home Depot credit card and a Lowe's credit card with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 limits that didn't require a personal credit check for approval, that you're not personally linked to as a guarantor? Why not use that credit to do the rehab of the home? Mm-hmm. Why not?
Right.
You know, why use your personal money? Why use the money that you have that taps into your liquid available cash? Why use your own personal money? Why use your own personal credit cards when that resource is there to do it? You know, why not use the Visa and the MasterCard with $50,000 limits to take the cash out and not pay the 20%, right? Why don't you liquidate those cards and use those to buy more homes? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of reasons that business credit can help those people, even in real estate or any of those scenarios.
Right. And, you know, not only that, but there are a lot of the, you know, credit cards, they have, you know, points and other things that, you know, there are people that have businesses or blogs that all they do is talk about, you know, travel hacking and all this type of stuff where they're just using different cards and they get different benefits. And so that can also be kind of rolled into that if you're using those types of credit cards, I would think.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a Dave Ramsey fan, and yeah. Dave talks about no debt, and I get that on the consumer side, but that's not how we work in the business world. Mm. In the business world, you know, the most successful companies like Walmart, for example, 80% of what Walmart sells, they buy using their business credit. They literally go to Bounty, they buy their product using business credit, they put it on the shelves, you pay for the paper towels, you give Walmart the money, they use it to pay off the credit. Every one of the largest successful companies out there, Procter & Gamble is very big on account receivable financing. So all these companies are using some form of business credit to get as big as they are. It's kind of like a rite of passage that they can use to be able to do so, to be able to have that success.
Absolutely. You know, and that's something that definitely investors or entrepreneurs need to realize, you know, is that this whole world runs on credit. That's just the system that we're in right now. And, you know, when you see all these big companies and these big buildings being put up, you know, what do you think that somebody's, you know, using their savings to build that? No, of course not. They go to the bank, they get credit. And that's how the world works. And so you got to learn how to play the game. And I have had people ask me about with if they're not a U.S. citizen or not a U.S. resident and they have a U.S. company, can they get business credit from an EIN?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, look, in a lot of the major countries around the world have a business credit. It's not just in the United States. Mm-hmm. The reporting agencies change a little from country to country, but for the most part, the reporting agencies are fundamentally the same in most countries. Mm-hmm. And the concept of building business credit and the steps to do so is the same. Some of the sources are different, though. You know, you may use Home Depot over here, while in other countries, that might not be the major source that you go to for those kind of supplies, but fundamentally it's exactly the same. So if in the United States you can have an EIN number and not be a citizen, right? Instead you go out, you get a TIN number instead of a social, and you use that to get your EIN. So you can have a business in the United States and build business credit for the business EIN, even if you're not a citizen. But even if you're not in the United States, you could still do this, even if you reside in other countries. The system's just a little bit different because sometimes, depending on the country you're in, the reporting agencies are a little different.
Okay. And what about – you talk a lot about real estate investing with an EIN, and you know, obviously that's a good idea, especially if it's, you know, rental real estate. My question is, how would you go about – can you use business credit from the U.S. to buy real estate in another country, or do you have to set up a corporation in that country that you're going to buy the real estate?
No, I mean that depends on the country, right? That depends on their requirements. Right. You can use our money here to be able to buy whatever you want to buy. There's no restriction. So if you took a credit card, you cashed it out, you liquidated the card, well, then it's just a matter of transfer currency, right? You're transferring the currency over there. And there's a lot of different a lot of different ways to be able to do so. But you can, for example, even go to currencytransfer.com. And if you do that, then from there, and I only bring that up because literally yesterday I interviewed him on my podcast, and they have a great system that makes it really simple and easy, knowing your fees up front, to take the money you have from the United States and move it to the country you need to be able to make the transaction.
Great. Yeah, you know, I just noticed on all your videos, you have so much insider knowledge on this type of thing because, you know, you've been working in this industry for a while and you really do know a lot of the little tricks or you know, things that you have to do. Keep in mind that a lot of people wouldn't know. I did want to ask you about entity structure. That's one thing that maybe people don't know about. If you have an LLC or a C corp, does that matter? What is a good idea to start your company if you're looking at building business credit?
Well, you can build business credit for any entity. Mm-hmm. The problem is that sole proprietorships and partnerships, you are the business. You are one and the same. So what that means is it means that if the business ever gets sued, you can get sued. And I'm not an attorney and I'm not giving legal advice, but that's what it ultimately comes down to. If you're a guarantor in the business or if you are the business, then if the business gets sued, you get sued. So as a business owner, you want to create some level of separation between you and the business. So if the business gets sued, the business gets sued, not you. Mm-hmm. And that's what a corporation can do for you. Even if you don't go with that entity, you could choose an LLC or limited liability company. And then by an LLC, you help limit that liability as well. So those are the better entities, even though you could build business credit for any, those are the best for limiting your liability.
Right. And I'm sure, especially for people that, you know, so for instance, say that they have an e-commerce store, maybe they're not a resident of the U.S., but they have an e-commerce store and they have a U.S. Corporation. What is a lot of people don't know about is, you know, what type of address, what type of phone number and that type of thing that the banks, you know, or you know, the creditors are going to want to see. So what are some of the kind of tips that you can give people when they're setting up their company so that they set it up correctly that would, you know, that that's going to be favorable to the creditors?
Well, I think you hit on a great point. And you know, what we all understand is that computers nowadays are making more of the underwriting and approval decisions than individuals are, right? We already know this because when we go to apply for credit cards, we either get an immediate approval or we get that dreaded message that we'll hear by mail in 7 to 10 days, which I don't know about you, but like that message I got in the mail in 7 to 10 days was never a good message. It was always a mean message that they denied me and what bureau they used to make the decision. Mm-hmm. So we know computers make these decisions instantaneous. The question becomes why and how? So there's kind of a formula that we found that lenders and credit issuers basically are using to establish whether your business is credible or not. Are you reputable? Are you legitimate? Are you credible? Whatever word you wanted to use to describe it, that's what they're looking for, is are you legit? And so some of the things they look at really, and the way I describe it, is every line item on an application becomes important when this is brought up. I mean, when it comes to credibility, you want to make sure that every item that you've complete on an application reflects that you're credible. So some things include the fact that you're using a business address. You're not using a home address. You're not using a P.O. box or UPS address. As a matter of fact, here's the hierarchy with addresses. You want to use a real physical business address if you have one and need to be in an office. If you don't, use a virtual address. These are addresses you simply rent from places like Alliance or Regis, but instead of paying for the entire office space, you're just paying for the address. Okay, we have got a great source at creditsuite.com/virtual where anybody can get access to a virtual address. The third is home address. That's the last resort option if the other two won't work. And again, you know, a picture of your home may show on your business credit report nowadays. You may not get approved with some sources like Walmart if you're using a home address. The never go to is P.O. Box and UPS. Those can get you denied more than anything else. So set up the right address. Get a business phone number. Make sure it's toll-free. Get a fax number for the business as well. and get that fund number listed with 411. Those are all very essential to setting up your credibility. You don't ever want to use a home address or a mobile address or a mobile phone. Those will immediately get you denied because no credible business is using a mobile phone as its main phone number, right? This doesn't make any sense. Get the right entity set up, as we talked about. Try to avoid names for the business that reflect that you're in high-risk industries, even us at Credit Suite. Our name reflects that we're in financial services. It's harder for us to get loans as a result of that. So know that going in, that that's going to be an obstacle. Have a professional website set up. Have a professional email address set up. You don't have the money? Well, then go to GoDaddy. It's $12 to get a domain. The emails come with it. Go to monstertemplate.com to get a website template for $50 to $100. Go to upwork.com, get somebody for $100 to put it up, and $100, $200, you have a professional website. Get a professional email address that goes with it. Don't use Yahoo and Gmail type email addresses. If you need to have licensing in your industry, get licensing. Set up your business bank account so you have a bank reference. So make a list of a few other references you may be able to give. Maybe these are people that don't report your payments, but you still make payments to them. Like we use a CRM called Infusionsoft. They don't report our payments, but we still can use them as a reference because we pay them every month. So those are just scratching the surface of some of the things you want to focus on to make sure that your business is perceived as legitimate and credible. Mm-hmm. I always give the added piece of advice is just whenever you fill out an answer on an application, ask yourself why they're asking for that information and ask yourself if what you're putting in the space reflects that you're really a legitimate, credible, big business. If the answer is no, you probably want to fix whatever that issue is so you are giving the perception that you're a big, large, credible business.
Mm-hmm. And the virtual address or virtual office, I've seen that the market is growing. There's a lot more people coming in now and there's different kinds, right? So there's ones that you could just do online really quickly. And, there's a whole bunch of people that use the same one. And then there's other ones where it's basically, like you said, it's, there's an office, you have a secretary there that knows about you, that can answer the phone and stuff like that. Is there any, within that whole range of virtual offices, is there something that you're going to want to look for that you're going to want to need if you're eventually going to want to build business credit?
Not really. What we find is that if you're using either Regis or Alliance, which we recommend Alliance, and you can even get a discount if you go to creditsuite.com/virtual. And we work that out with it because we know how important that these virtual addresses are. If you're working with one of those type of companies, you're okay. The problem is that there's other companies out there that make you try to believe they're a virtual address, but they're super cheap. They're like $10 a month, $20 a month. Those are not really virtual addresses. Those are really PO boxes or mailboxes like UPS. So you just have to be careful with that.
I see. So traveling mailbox, and there's a lot of ones like that, that's not going to work for what we're talking
typically
about.
Typically not. Because they're typically not virtual addresses. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you got to look out for. The problem is that, back in the 80s, the government kind of made a change where they put all these PO boxes and UPS addresses into one central database. So for a lot of reasons, including that lenders and credit issuers can recognize what they are. Mm-hmm. So the problem is that when you use these, and an example is iPostal. iPostal will try to make it look like you're getting a virtual address, and it's super cheap. It's like $10 a month. But the reality is you're getting a UPS address, and that can get you denied. So as long as you're getting a real virtual address at a place like Alliance, a place like Regis, then you're going to be okay. You just have to make sure that you're not falling victim to these services that make you think they're a virtual address and they're super cheap when they're really not.
I see. Okay, and so say somebody, they're just they're starting their company now. They are buying into what we're saying. They say, okay, I need to do this. How do they to get started? You were talking about the cards that they need to get. How would you recommend the first steps to going ahead and get it? Say that they already have their entity set up and they have a corporate bank account. Now, what's the very next step? What do they need to do to get started?
The way it comes down is that you want to set up the business credibly, step one. Mm-hmm. Step two, you want to start getting I'm going to throw in a step two. You want to probably check to see if the reporting agencies know you exist now. Mm-hmm. And you can go to creditsuite.com/reports to do that. And what that'll do is that gives you just a quick link to Dun & Bradstreet, Equifax, Experian that you can go to see if they to do a free search, doesn't cost you anything, to see if they know you exist now. The reason you want to do this is because if Experian and Equifax know your business exists, and if they have your SIC code, they populate a credit report for you and a failing business credit score just because you have no credit. They consider you to be high risk because you have no credit. And so the minute they know you exist, credit reports populated, failing score is issued. So are you building credit off a no score or a failing score? You probably want to know that. CreditSuite.com/reports gives you a quick link for a quick search to see what they know about you now. Now, it'll also take you right to Dun & Bradstreet, and then you can get your DUNS number for Dun & Bradstreet for free. If you try to get your DUNS number, they'll call you and they'll email you and try to upsell you on a package for $1,500 or $2,000 to be able to activate your credit profile and get your DUNS. You don't need that package. So if you don't want to be sold by them, never get on the phone with them. Anytime Dun & Bradstreet calls you ever, they're only ever trying to sell you something. So if you don't want to be sold, don't get on the phone with them. But the DUNS number is completely free. And then once you have that, then you want to move to what we talked about in the beginning of the show. You want to move to start getting vendor credit. Gimplers, Grainger, Uline, Quill, Wells Fargo has a secured credit card. These are credit cards you could use that can start the business credit profile and score. Once you have five of those reporting on your business credit reports, then you want to move on and you want to start getting actual store credit, retail credit. Now, if your listeners go to creditsuite.com/monitoring, we've got a link there where they can get credit reports with Dun & Bradstreet and Experian for $24 a month. That's through NAV. Okay. If they don't go that link and they go directly to Experian and D&B, it's $210 a month for the exact same report. So that at least makes it affordable to monitor those. The minute you're seeing the accounts, you see the five actually on your business credit reports, then you take the next step of getting retail credit, store credit. This is Amazon. This is Apple. This is Dell. This is Office Depot and Staples, etc. These retailers will start to approve you when you have five accounts. Some will want seven, some will want eight, right? But as you continue to get more of these retailers will approve you. And then when you get to a level of about 8 or 10, you can get Fleet credit cards. You can get BP, you can get Chevron, you can get Sunoco, you can get Wex Fleet cards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you get to about 14 accounts, then you can move to auto vehicle financing. Places like GM and Ford and Ally Credit Union, they will give you auto vehicle financing. You can get the Visa card, the MasterCard. So those are the steps beginning to end. It starts with credibility, getting set up with the reporting agencies, then just moving through, as we talked about, those tiers of credit till you get to the very end, which is the Visa card, the MasterCard, the auto vehicle financing, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And how long does that usually take, you're saying, with your clients?
What we see is that it really kind of depends on how fast and how much credit you're applying for, right? You determine the pace, because if you're coming in the first round and you get 15 vendors instead of five, well, you're going to get to the next step faster, because if you give 15, there's a better chance that five of those will report sooner than if you only got five and wait for all five of them to report. Mm-hmm. So it depends on how much credit you're applying for and how long it's taking to apply. But the only thing that restricts business credit building is that when you get credit and use the credit and pay the bill, it can take 30 days to report. So the reporting time is the only thing that delays your ability to move from tier to tier to tier. So if you take into account 30 to 60 days of you using the credit and paying the bill, then that means in about 6 months total time, you could get to the very final tier of building business credit.
Okay. I forgot to ask you, when we were talking about virtual address, I also wanted to say with the phone number, will any type of phone number work, say like a Skype number or something? Or is there anything?
A voice over IP number will work. Mm-hmm. For some reason, Google numbers are not well received with lenders and credit issuers. We're still trying to figure out why that is, but it is that way. So avoid Google numbers, but you're describing things like voice over IP numbers, like Ring Central. Right. Mm-hmm. Those are fine. Those are fine to use.
Okay. But it's better to get it listed on 411, you said. Correct.
It's not just better. Mm-hmm. It's really an essential thing.
Okay.
Because these vendors in the beginning, they're not looking at your credit report to make a decision. So what they're typically looking for is this. Do you have an EIN? Are you listed with 411? Like some of the vendors at the beginning, if you just have those two things, will approve you. Mm-hmm. The problem is if you're not listed with 411, they may make you place two or three orders. They may make you wait 3 months for your account to get reported. There's all these barriers they'll throw up if that number's not listed with 411, which prolongs the time to you to build the initial profile and score.
Okay. And I would think that an 800 number would be even better, right, than a local number?
Sure. Okay. And that's why you definitely want to have a toll-free number, because a toll-free number gives you credibility, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you're not calling Dell on a local number.
Right.
You know, and it's the same with a fax number. You might be like, well, I don't need a fax. I get it. But you know who has a fax? Every one of the biggest companies in this country, even, you know, everybody has a fax. So, mm-hmm. you know, even if you're not going to use it, just the perception that you have a fax number, again, just the fact that you have a fax number gives the lender the perception that you're more credible.
Got it. And I would think that also your business showing up on Google, if you search it on the maps, or, you know, that your address shows up as your business would help as well, no?
Absolutely. I mm-hmm. mean, what a lot of people don't know is that the reporting agencies in the business world get information from those sources. They mm-hmm. actually get information from Facebook, from Yelp, from Bing, from Yahoo, from Google Places. They get information from those and populate on the credit report. So not only do you want to make sure that that's established, it would help. But one of the most important things you want to do, especially when it comes to getting loans and credit lines, is make sure that all the information is congruent. Is what's on the Secretary of State records the exact same as what's on the application? Is that the same business name and address that what's on the bank statement? You've got to make sure that all that stuff is congruent.
Okay. And, you know, this is also good for personal protection and, you know, that type of thing. If you're running your business and you're running it all through your own personal credit cards, or, you know, your own address and all that, I mean, that's not good for your own privacy and protection, and also liability protection. So, you know, this is good proactive stuff for you to think about.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what's the difference, would you say, like, if people are used to using their personal credit, what's the difference between business credit and personal credit as far as interest rates and the amount of credit that they give you? Is it about the same or different?
Well, when it comes to interest rates, they're for the most part the same. Commercial or business interest rates are a little bit higher than consumer credit cards, but not a lot. But limits are substantially higher. You know, per SBA, limits are about 10 to 100 times higher on business credit accounts than consumer credit, which means if you're used to getting, you know, $1,000 limits now in the business world, those limits are probably going to be 10 grand or higher. It may seem outlandish, but it makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, you know, as an individual, you're never going to need to spend 10 grand on home computers at Dell. But, you know, for a business, you could easily blow past 10 grand for computers. The bottom line is, you know, one of the core components of credit is called capacity, and mm-hmm. businesses have a greater need for capacity than consumers do, which is why limits are so much higher on the commercial side than they are on the consumer.
Okay. Yeah. So is it once you build that up, okay, and you're paying off the credit cards, you have this credit there, is there anything that you do to, like, maintain it, or you say that you're not going to use it? Like you said, you have a $100,000 credit line there. Can you just forget about it and use it when you need it, or something that you need to, like, continuously keep up?
Well, you know, what's interesting about business credit reports is if you ever look at your own, it will tell you, if you look carefully, it will tell you the recent amount of high credit you've used, not your actual limit. Now, lenders and credit issuers do have access to your limits, but the reporting agencies are telling you that the primary factor is not your limit, but what you're using. And we're not used to this in the consumer world. Consumer world, credit card approvals are really, for the most part, based on what your limits, your similar limits are. Like you see this, if Walmart raises your limit, like, you get a notice 2 weeks later that Target did. So, you know, they're kind of raising limits based on what your other limits are. In the reporting agency or in the business world, we're looking mostly at what you're actually using, what your credit reports are showing that you're using at any given time. So for you to get the maximum benefit, you want to try to use as many accounts as possible, primarily because your scores are based on payment history. That's what they're based on. Mm-hmm. So the more accounts that you're paying, the better you're getting an average of payment history. And then that provides some layer of protection, right? So for example, our accountant, for some reason, screwed up and didn't pay our Amazon bill this week. Well, that sucks because we didn't even need to spend $100 on the credit card, right? We could have paid cash. We're only doing it to build our business credit. But the good thing for us is that we have so many accounts reporting that it really doesn't affect our score, because we have so many positive to offset that one negative that it just doesn't really have an impact at all. So that's one of the benefits of using a lot of credit, is that since your payments are or your score is based on how you pay your bills, the more positive payments you have, have, the more you can offset a little negative from here to there. That helps you a lot. But plus, when credit issuers see that you're using credit and see that you're using high amounts of credit, then that's what will net you higher approvals in the future. And it's interesting because teaching what I teach, I have these kind of two segments of people. I have people that just build business credit to try to get to the very end goal of a Visa card, right? Then when they get there, when they get 14 accounts, like the highest credit limit they have is like $2,000 because they were never using the actual credit they're getting. They're just trying to acquire as many accounts as possible. Then I have clients that get to that exact same place that are actually really using the credit for things they need to grow the business. But because they're using credit for what they need and credit issuers are seeing they're putting $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 on their credit cards and paying it off, those same people are getting $20,000 limits when the other people are getting $2,000 or $5,000. So using the credit and them seeing that you're using it and putting money on there and paying it off, that's what will net you higher approvals faster. So I do recommend that you get credit and use it at least somewhat here and there and try to actually really use it for stuff you need. That will help expedite the business credit building process.
Okay. And I'm sure that, you know, you need to be at a certain point in your business as far as profitability, as far as how many years you've been in business and profitable. What do they normally look for as a track record, or at what point should you need to get started doing this?
Well, that doesn't really matter. I mean, when it comes to income, when it comes to revenue, when it comes to profitability, those things will become important as you move forward to get loans and credit lines. But they're not important when you get business credit cards. They're not important when you get consumer credit cards either, right? They ask what you make. They don't ask for any verification. They don't ask for W-2s and tax returns and pay stubs when you get credit cards. It's the same in the business world. And they're going to want to know employees, they're going to want to know your revenue, etc., but they're not making that the major part of their decision. Look, if you have somebody that has 15 accounts on their business credit reports, they're using $2,000, $4,000, $5,000, $7,000 a month, that person's going to get more business credit cards all day long. They're exactly what a credit issuer wants. They've got credit, they have a track history of paying, the credit is agreed, and they're using the credit regularly. So that's a perfect person that a credit card company wants to actually see. That's what they're looking at more than anything, is are you using the credit? Are you paying the bills? Are you doing those things? In doing so, that's what they're really wanting to see to continue to issue you more and more credit.
All right. Now, it sounds like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people think that, you know, it sounds too good to be true that you could get all this credit. And since it's in your EIN, you know, you have no liability for this, say that something happens. You know, is it really true that you're not on the hook? Or what would happen if, you know, God forbid something did happen to your business and you've taken out some credit? How is that resolved?
Well, what it comes down to is if you look at the definition of a personal guarantee is needed when a business cannot stand on its own. That's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. And this makes sense to us because we all know that, like, Michael Dell isn't signing personally for and like having a personal credit check done when Dell needs $100 million credit line. Like, when we even think about it, we laugh and go, that's absurd. That's, of course we know that's ridiculous. But so we know it's possible. I think it's the disconnect becomes, the myth becomes that people think it can only happen with the larger businesses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, personal guarantees exist because your business can't stand on its own. What we're talking about here is building your credit profile and score so the business can stand on its own, where the business has its own history, track history of paying as agreed for the business. And let's be honest, that's what credit issuers want to see more important than your own personal history. You know, yeah, if I don't have anything else to base decision on, well, then how you've paid your personal bills can help me. But like, if I have a choice, like, I'm going to prefer to look at how your business pays its bills, because that to me is more of an indication of how you're going to pay my business credit card than looking at your personal history. So if you really think of it like that, you know, it makes a lot of sense for them to want to have a business history and then not needing the personal guarantee, not needing the individual's credit. Their credit and their guarantee becomes less important the more credit and history the business acquires, and then the business can stand on its own. So I have this, I run into this a lot. Well, I like to tell people, as I say, look, first of all, we didn't invent business credit. Dun & Bradstreet's been around since 1841. Five U.S. presidents have worked for Dun & Bradstreet, the biggest reporting agency in the world. I mean, they've been around a long time before consumer credit even existed. The difference is that credit issuers do a pretty good job of keeping this kind of on the down low in secret. and they do it for a reason. Because James, if you're willing to give a personal guarantee, why would they tell you not to? And we live in a world where most medium and larger businesses are the ones that know about this and the small guys don't, because they have the bigger businesses have CFOs. They have bookkeepers. They have accountants. They're attracting more financial savvy people that eventually tell the business owners and the CEOs, oh, you can't do that anymore. Your business needs to establish its own credit profile and score. The problem is startups don't have the CFOs to tell them that. And that's why these credit issuers and lenders have kind of lived in this world where they're happy because only the bigger businesses know you can get away with no guarantee and the smaller ones don't. So it kind of works out by default the way they want it to. But it's absolutely possible because your business can stand on its own once its own credit profile and score is established.
Okay. And I think that, you know, I've heard people that say that you can kind of skip to the front of the line or get past a lot of the beginning stuff by buying a shelf corporation. I don't know if maybe you could tell us what a shelf corporation is and if you recommend doing that.
Well, sure. Shelf corporations are basically where people are buying a seasoned company. So what somebody basically does is they buy a company name. Okay. They set up an entity in a state. So they come to Florida, they set up an entity, ABC Company. Then they do nothing with the entity. They just pay the annual fee every year. And then the idea is that 2-3 years later, you can now buy a company that's been seasoned and has been in existence for 2 or 3 years. And now you're going to run in and get all this credit faster. And everybody is going to start throwing money at you because of that. The problem is that none of that is realistic. Shelf corps are completely bogus. They provide no value when it helps you getting credit financing. And here's why. Because the minute you buy a shelf corporation, the ownership changes. The minute the ownership changes, tons of red flags come up all over the place in the financing world, meaning that now you've triggered them to look exactly for what you're trying to convince them you have that you don't really have seasoning. They're saying, okay, wait a minute. So let me get this straight. You've had a company over 3 years, but you just took ownership and now you're out applying for credit cards. That sounds odd. So their next request is very simple. Show us your bank statements. We want to see when you open your bank account. Then you're done. Then you're screwed. I probably shouldn't have said that. Might have been a bad word. Maybe I have to edit that out. But that's what ultimately happens. Because what happens is now they come in and they verifying how long your business has been open based on when you open your bank account, which you can't get as part of the shelf corporation. The further problem with that is if you're buying trade lines or if you're buying shelf corporations and reporting agencies like Dun and Bradstreet know what you've done, which is pretty simple, and they start seeing credit and relations back to these companies they know are associated with selling these things, what they do is they shut down your entire credit profile. It's gone forever. Like, we're not used to that in the consumer world. Like, there's nobody, they don't have that kind of power over us. But since there's no Fair Credit Reporting Act, the business world, they could do whatever they want to do. And that's exactly what they do. They completely wipe out your credit profile, and then you have to start from scratch and do it the right way. We see that happen all the time.
Okay. And so it's good to just start from the beginning, take the right steps and do it correctly. We did touch you mentioned the name, that your name puts you in a high-risk category. What are some things that you need to stay away from or to think about when you're naming your business?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot of high-risk industries, and they could go to our YouTube channel, and we've got videos that we cover this, but some are financial services, banks, mortgage brokers, real estate investors, anybody dealing with credit, anybody, accountants, anybody dealing with any kind of financial stuff at all. You've got pawn shops. You've got people that sell ammunition and guns, people that sell pornography. Those are off the top of my head some of the many industries that will, by being in one of those, will make it more difficult to get accessing.
I see. So yeah, if you're showing that you're in that business at all, then it maybe just – okay. So you just got to think about how you are naming your business so that you're not in some of these high-risk categories, and you can just go to that video and see all those categories.
Right. And I mean, what it comes down to, you can't hide who you are, and I don't recommend you are. You do. You know, I don't recommend that you're in – you know, a real estate investor, and you're trying to teach people that you make dog treats. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say. What I am trying to say is that your name itself can trigger red flags in these automated approval systems that these lenders and credit issuers have. So, like, if I can choose between putting real estate in my name and putting consulting in my name, like, I'm going to go with consulting because consulting won't be triggered as high risk. But you have to decide the trade-off there. Then people won't have a clear idea of what you do. So what is the sacrifice you want to make? In our world, we made the sacrifice. We want people to know that we have a suite of products that help them with commercial credit. So we named our company Credit Suite. We know it's going to be harder, and it has. It's harder to get merchant accounts. It's harder to get loans. It's harder to get financing. We knew that. We accepted the risk coming in. And although we still whine and hit our fists against the desk, upset when it's harder, we accept it. We go, look, this is what we decided to do, and this is what we accepted at the time. But then on the opposite side, we could have chosen something that didn't have credit in it. It would have been easier for us to get these things, but our customers wouldn't have known what we did. And then the problem is that when we go to loans and credit lines anyways, then they're diving in at a deeper level, and they're going to know what we do anyways. So you have to kind of make those trade-offs and sacrifices and decide what works better for you. But having something in your name that reflects your high risk will make it more difficult to get automated approvals when it comes to revolving credit.
Okay. Now, what about, I mean, I see that you're also a credit, or you have worked in the credit repair industry, right?
Yep. I owned a consumer credit business many years ago and an exit. I sold that business.
So, I've heard people that say that, oh, you know, credit repair is not real and people will scam you out of money or, you know, this type of thing. What's the deal with that? I mean, how can you tell between a legitimate or what some people say are, you know, kind of scammy things with credit repair?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, in any industry, there's going to be unscrupulous people. And I think nowadays, the internet, it's easier than ever to find them, right? You do a search for the company, you do a search for the owner, and don't just look at the fact that they have a ripoff report complaint and say, oh, yeah, they're scumbags. What does the complaint really say? Is it valid? Are people responding to the complaint? Because places like Ripoff Report, anybody can just put a complaint up, whether it's legitimate or not. What is their Better Business Bureau rating? So I think there's plenty of ways you can find out, no matter what company or industry you're looking at. There's plenty of places out there that will do that. But what it really comes down to is that you want to find a reputable company and by doing the research on their reputation. But at the same time, it absolutely fundamentally works if you're working with the company that knows what's going on. And here's why. There's a law called the Fair Credit Reporting Act that regulates how credit issuers and lenders must treat your credit, what they can and can't do. And what I found in many years of working with this is that these credit issuers are violating these laws quite intentionally and manipulating credit in a way where it hurts you more than it is. Now, I understand the statement I made is pretty broad, right? It could be a conspiracy theory. They're manipulating credit. But here's why I say that. In all the credit reports I've looked at, over 10,000 in my career, not once have I ever seen a credit issuer accidentally make a mistake that helps the person. I've never seen that, right? Like, I've never seen them accidentally remove bad payments and make the history good, right? But I've seen tens of thousands of examples of them manipulating data that hurts you. So I've come to believe, after seeing tens of thousands of manipulations that hurt people and none that help, that it's quite intentional. So what happens is, for example, there are reason codes. There are these little things on credit reports that a layperson may not even know of that impacts them different ways than something else. So one reason code or one code indicating a collection when it should be something else harms you worse than it should be. If they update the date of last activity, the last time you made a payment, that can really adversely affect your credit reports, because stuff that is more recent is more damaging to your scores than stuff that's older. So there are so many manipulations of credit that can be done that lay people don't even know when they're looking at their credit reports, that you need to know that it is your right to challenge everything on your credit report to make sure it is 100% accurate, 100% verifiable, and 100% timely. Meaning it's on there in the time frame it should be. And it is the credit issuer's job to verify that, not yours. The burden of proof falls on them. So what we found was going through using the Fair Credit Reporting Act, looking at these derogatory items, saying, we do not think this aspect of the account is accurate. That process removed 80 to 90% of negative items. I mean, time after time after time again, 80 to 90% of derogatory items came off the report, because when challenged and said, I don't think this is accurate, verify it is, the credit issuer could not verify the information and by law had to remove it. So 80 to 90% of bad stuff getting deleted off somebody's report, to me, that's pretty effective to say that credit repair works, but you can't expect to come in with completely shoddy credit and leave with pristine. You're going to have some stuff that's verified that you're still going to have to wait for it to drop off the report, but 8 or 9 out of these 10 derogatory accounts, if you're working with a good company, I've seen historically can be removed.
Great. And are there any specific companies that you would recommend?
There's a lot of them. Okay. And too many I would mention here because when it really comes down to it, a lot of them work there. A lot of them are partners with us and offer business credit financing services. Mm-hmm. So it's not fair for me to pick one or two and recommend them. All I can do is go back to my initial comments and say, look at their reputation. Their reputation and the actual reviews they have will give you pretty good feedback of whether they're reputable or they're not.
Okay, great. I also wanted to ask you about crowdfunding specifically. I've had people on the podcast talking about crowdfunding, how it's changing financing, a lot of different things, especially for startups. Are you seeing how does that work into what you're doing with Credit Suite, and what kind of new things are you seeing as far as crowdfunding goes?
Well, crowdfunding is a great form of financing out there, and we're doing more and helping our customers tap into this more. It just what it really comes down to is, do you have an idea, a concept that's very, very, very unique and different? That's what it really comes down to. You know, your concept has to be truly unique and truly different for it to work on a crowdfunding campaign. You're not going to go in and get money for real estate investing, for example. Mm-hmm. The other thing that people don't realize is that crowdfunding, to be successful, it's typically reliant on two things: your ability to share it within your social networks, your ability to line up investors before the project goes live. Just crowdfunding platforms like Kickstarter are no different than Facebook in the fact that people that are bidding on a bunch of projects and they see more engagement, they show it to more people. So you've got to fake the engagement right from the beginning. You have to have a bunch of investors lined up where the minute that thing goes live, people are contributing money. You have to wildly share it on social, so tons of views are hitting that campaign. That is where places like Indiegogo and Kickstarter see that it actually is a popular campaign. Show it to more people, and that's what gives you a legitimate chance of it going viral.
Okay. Yeah, like a launch team. I know there's people, you know, you let everybody know this is going to be launching and kind of, you know, get on it as soon as you release it. So. All right. So, yeah, I mean, this is a lot of information. I think we've covered a lot here. You know, again, if people are interested in this, there is tons of free information at his Credit Suite, and this is a YouTube Credit Suite, SUITE. And also, we have a ebook. I will put a link to that at the bottom, and that is How to Build Credit for Your EIN That Is Not Linked to Your SSN. And that just goes through a lot of what we talked about and more. And that's a free ebook and a lot of free information at the website. So I would recommend people go check that out. And is there anything else you'd like to let the listeners know about your business?
I think you're an amazing host. We covered so much information today that I feel is really actionable. We have a great free guide at creditsuite.com/EIN. And at creditsuite.com/EIN, your listeners can grab a guide that more in depth walks through the things we didn't get a chance to talk about more in regards to the steps to build business credit.
All right. Great. Thanks so much for taking the time today to speak with us.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast. Traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.